With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning. Today is Wednesday, October 18th. Coming up in today's show, the California Avocado Society is having their annual meeting this week. We'll have more on that in a bit, but we start off this morning with Taylor Hillman.
Cooperative Extension Pomology Tree Crop Advisor David Dahl has been looking at a more efficient way to fumigate almond orchards when replacing old trees for new.
Traditionally, we've always looked at fumigation as either broadcast application of telone or row strip application of telone or methyl bromide. But we've been working with Trical and developing an experimental application of fumigants, of pre-plant soil fumigants, in which we utilize spot fumigation.
Dahl said they're using a normal rig equipped with GPS that's been programmed with where the new trees will be placed.
As it approaches a predefined boundary around the center of the tree, this is usually about a 7-foot by 7-foot box centered on the tree site, and injects the gas, shuts it off, comes to the next one, turns it on, turns it off.
The technology reduces the amount of land fumigated by 20-30%.
And this allows us to reduce that fumigated area essentially from a row strip application, which is about 50% of the orchard, to a tree spot, which is around 20-30% of the orchard, depending on tree spacing.
Stay with AgNet West to hear how the technology is working and the many benefits of the practice. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
What are the chances of getting a new farm bill passed on time? We hear the views of some former agriculture secretaries. Here's Gary Crawford.
Passing a new farm bill every 4 to 5 years becomes tougher to do every time. Lawmakers this time want to get the next one done by the end of next year. What are the chances it'll be done on time or done at all?
I don't sense any profound differences that would make a bill impossible to get.
Former Ag Secretary Dan Glickman at a press conference in Des Moines, Iowa, Monday, along with former Secretaries Mike Johanns, Ann Vinneman, and Ed Schaefer. Glickman and Mike Johanns said it will be tough. There's one thing, though, that could help the process.
We have a good Secretary of Agriculture now, Sonny Perdue, who the President seems to like. And I think that's probably the best news possible.
I agree about Sonny Perdue. He'll build a great farm bill team that will support that effort.
But Ann Vindman said USDA still hasn't filled most of the rest of its team.
So as you prepare for a farm bill, I think it's challenging that you don't have your leadership in place.
And Ed Schaefer said he thinks to get a bill, lawmakers are going to have to cut the costs of the farm bill. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The Agriculture Secretary talked about U.S. and global partnerships to improve food security worldwide during a visit to the U.N. Food and Agriculture Organization in Rome. Rod Bain reports.
USDA's work complements the efforts of FAO. We have a long history of contributing to global food security.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue in Rome Monday, joining Pope Francis and other global dignitaries in celebrating World Food Day at United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization headquarters. The secretary was among those recognizing the importance of what we grow, produce, and consume in the way of food.
Global food security contributes to national security and global security.
Secretary Perdue said USDA and the U.S. stands with FAO and its members in combating poverty, food insecurity, and malnutrition worldwide, while expanding ag productivity and rural economic growth around the globe.
In addition to our food security programs, we also work closely with developing countries to help build agricultural sectors and support long-term economic development and food security. FAO provides capacity building for countries in need of implementation assistance.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Representative Dan Newhouse says while many of the details have yet to be worked out, legislation introduced by Representative Bob Goodlatte is an important first step to address ag's labor shortage. The Republican from Virginia introduced the American Guest Worker Act, or AG Act, which would replace the H-2A program with a new, flexible, and market-driven guest worker program designed to meet the needs of the diverse agriculture industry. According to Goodlatte, the bill would create a new H-2C guest worker program under which the foreign workers would be allowed an initial stay of 36 months. Subsequent visas for year-round agricultural jobs and all other H-2C visas would afford a work period of 18 months. Newhouse, who has been working on similar legislation, says H-2Cs would take the agriculture community to a much better place.
I think this is will be a very good step forward. As you know, immigration reform is a huge issue in our area. A day does not go by that I do not hear from someone that is having a very difficult time attracting a labor force that they need in this harvest period.
The AG Act would allow current undocumented ag workers to get an H-2C visa and provides for 500,000 H-2C visas a year, with allowances to adjust that number depending on agricultural labor needs. The program would also give employers the option to provide housing and transportation for their workers currently required under the H-2A program. In addition, the H-2C program would be administered by the USDA. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
When it comes to a healthy bottom line for your farming operation, nothing helps like healthy soil. Producers who use soil health management systems report lower input costs while maintaining or even improving their yields. Plus, those systems help with drought protection and soil and water conservation. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out more and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills,
our math, our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination,
our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's Brian German.
The California Avocado Society's 2017 annual meeting is happening on October 20th and 21st in Ventura. Check-in for the field tours begins at noon on Friday at the Hanson Agricultural Center. Attendees will then be provided with directions to the tour locations. The President's Barbecue reception will begin that afternoon at 4:30. Registration will open at 7:30 on Saturday morning at the Four Points by Sheraton Ventura Harbor Resort. President of the California Avocado Society, Mike Nunez, will be welcoming attendees at 8:30. Multiple industry experts will be speaking on a variety of topics, including cryopreservation, remote sensing technologies, and soil and plant analysis. UCR Director of Ag Operations, Dr. Peggy Mock, will also be providing an update on current rootstock trials. Registration is still open for the 102nd annual meeting on October 20th and 21st in Ventura. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
In 2016, a federal court ruled that the internet is a utility as important as water and electricity. Yet a 2016 Pew Research study found rural Americans are less likely than urbanites to have home internet, smartphones, and other devices. And they also go online less frequently. Michael Clements has more.
Why does this digital divide exist, and how do we bridge it? Alex Miller of Viasat says that while internet is such an essential service, rural Americans have a harder time accessing it.
So, you know, with any utility, there's always going to be a cost to build the infrastructure to provide that service. In the case of internet, traditional providers have to dig trenches and lay cable or fiber or string it on poles to serve those homes and businesses. And, you know, that might work very well in urban areas where homes and stores are built close together. But it becomes a lot more expensive for companies to do that in less populated areas. So in those rural places, traditional internet just isn't available because it's cost prohibitive for those cable or phone service providers.
Some people move to the country specifically to get away from city life. Miller explains why having a quality internet access is important for the rural areas those folks flock to.
Good internet is a necessity for just about everybody those days. You know, studies have shown that rural counties that have good broadband attract more new business, have faster household income growth, and stronger employment than counties that don't. Beyond those economic factors, you know, there's online services like telehealth. You know, if you live far from a hospital or a clinic, the ability to have an online consultation with a doctor can literally be a lifesaver. And if you're far from a grocery store or other retail outlets, you can shop online, even have food delivered to your home. That saves time, and for those who prefer to be in the country, it also means avoiding the hassles and crowds of driving to a store. These are the types of online services that actually enhance the peaceful quality of life that a lot of people seek when they move to the country.
When it comes to rural internet needs, Miller explains the options.
In rural areas for internet, your best bet is likely going to be an internet service that's not dependent on cable or fiber. And that means often satellite service like Xceed by Viasat, or sometimes a wireless internet service provider that's sometimes called a WISP. These are things where they put a little antenna on your house and they've got a transmitter up on a tower or something like that. And if you've got a line of sight to it, it can have a pretty decent service. But you know, if there's trees or hills or anything like that in the way, it won't work very well. And they typically peak out at about 20 meg speeds. Now, some people in rural areas will also try to get by with just their mobile phone carrier. You know, in a lot of those rural locations, you're too far away from the cell tower for the cell service to work well anyway, so your internet's not going to work great at your house. And plus, data over a mobile phone can be pretty expensive.
He outlines the advantages to a satellite internet connection.
Satellite internet's really easy to get installed. It's just a small dish that a technician installs on your home or business. And the service comes from our satellite in space, not through a cable or a phone line or even a tower. So as long as your home has a clear view to our satellite in the southern sky, you can probably get our service. The satellite internet used to have a reputation for being slow and expensive, but, you know, that's changed quite a bit. The FCC defines broadband internet as speeds of at least 25 megabits per second, and those speeds are already available with Xceed by Viasat in many parts of the country. When our new satellites start service in early 2018, they'll be standard almost everywhere, and we'll even be offering speeds significantly faster than that, as well as much more robust data plans. So that means that, you know, folks living in rural areas, you really can get quality high-speed internet without having to wait for those traditional providers to find a way to bring you service. And that means that the already high quality of life you enjoy living in the country will get even better.
Learn more about Viasat by Xceed online at www.viasat.com. Michael Clements reporting.
Well, in today's livestock news, the pork industry and other ag interests argue before the Supreme Court that now possibly moot lawsuits over the Obama administration's Waters of the U.S. or WOTUS rule should be handled at the federal district court level, not before an appellate court. The National Pork Producers Council and dozens of other ag groups in oral arguments before the High Court say the 2015 WOTUS rule put on hold by the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in Ohio a year ago should be heard in a U.S. district court. Here's MPPC spokesman Dave Warner.
Those courts are dealing with more local issues, like somebody trying to get a permit, a wetlands permit. So we think that they should be heard at the district court level rather than brought to an appellate court somewhere far away from where the permit's being sought.
But Warder admits the whole issue of court jurisdiction may be moot.
The administration has indicated that it is going to rescind the existing WOTUS rule, which came out in August 2015, but has been obviously put on hold by the courts since then.
The Trump order to the EPA proposes to work with stakeholders on a rule that still protects waterways, but is more workable for pork producers and others.
First of all, an awful lot of them are also crop farmers, but all of them use their manure or sell their manure to people who put that manure on cropland as fertilizer. It replaces man-made fertilizer.
But if that manure is put in a gully, Warner says objectors could argue a permit's required since the original WOTUS expanded EPA jurisdiction to upstream waters and intermittent streams and ditches that farmers may use for drainage and irrigation. But the EPA and Army Corps are now taking oral public comments and will take written comments up through November 28th. Speaking of the pork industry, Rabobank is predicting steady growth for that industry. A new report says increased production and additional processing capacity and the likely improvement in margins will help the U.S. pork industry remain in expansion mode through the year 2025. The report, steady growth ahead for the U.S. pork industry, says domestic consumption is expected to grow slightly, but most of the growth should come in the form of exports. The report says exports are the most important component of demand for U.S. pork. Now, to remain profitable, expansion through the year 2025, the report says the U.S. will need to increase pork exports by some 400,000 metric tons. By the year 2025, researchers anticipate exports to increase by 100,000 metric tons to China and more than 200,000 metric tons to Mexico. That leaves the need to find additional markets for the remaining 100,000 metric tons. And a quick reminder, the 101st Annual Convention of the California Cattlemen's Association and California Cattlewomen starts November 29th at the Nugget Casino Resort in Sparks, Nevada. For more information, just go to calcattlemen.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Cotton, one of America's oldest and biggest crops. Cotton is one of the first crops grown in America. But cotton is in what appears to be a losing battle to a fabric made from petroleum. Polyester? As one extension economist put it, polyester is beating cotton to death in the fashion world. One reason is polyester is cheaper. Cheaper attracts a lot of buyers, but in the long run, it isn't as cheap as the customer imagines. A polyester fabric doesn't last as long as cotton. This isn't something new. Polyester started its gain over 15 years ago, but, and get this now, men don't like synthetics as much as they do cotton. And did I mention that polyester costs more than cotton? So, all things considered, cotton is cheaper and more durable, not to mention more comfortable. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, Agnet West.
If you enjoy traveling to the National Farm Machinery Show each year, there is a change of plans for next year. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers has withdrawn from a proposed collaborative venture with the Kentucky State Fair Board for that machinery show. The AEM and the Fair Board had signed a letter of intent and announced a verbal agreement under which AEM would assist with the management and co-production of the annual Indoor Farm Machinery Show. That show has been held in the Kentucky Expo Center in Louisville for 52 years. However, according to AEM, the two parties were not able to reach a final agreement on how to proceed forward. And as a result, AEM's Ag Sector Board has decided to withdraw from the proposal. Kurt Blades, AEM Senior Vice President of Ag Services, talks with Chuck Zimmerman about the announcement.
I'm visiting with Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. And Kurt, this week we had an announcement about AEM kind of pulling out of a proposed collaborative venture with the Kentucky State Fair Board. Tell us a little bit about the decision behind that and what that means.
Well, Chuck, when AEM and the board of directors made the decision to pull out of our agreement with a proposed agreement with the National Farm Machinery Show, it certainly wasn't something we entered into lightly or made a decision lightly. To give it a little bit of a background, we as an association have been in discussions with the Kentucky Fair Board, the National Farm Machinery Show, for about 3 years, for various ways, really to live up to a charge that we've been given by our board of directors to elevate the level of experience that exhibitors and attendees have at that particular trade show. And where that directive sort of came from is that, you know, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers has a charge for creating customer connections between our members and the buyers of equipment. In the case of the ag side, it's farmers. We also, do the same thing in construction, forestry, mining, utilities. AEM has proven some success with their ownership of existing trade shows around the world. In fact, we own and manage some of the best trade shows, largest trade shows in the world, specifically in the construction and the utilities front. And what we, wanted to do sort of at the direction of our members was to take some of that experience that we've had to make, ConExpo, ConAg, which happens every 3 years in Las Vegas, or IQ, which is an underground utility show that happens currently in Louisville, to take that experience and apply it to the ag space, where we really have, just a first-class experience for both the attendees and the exhibitors. What essentially happened, in about 8 months ago, we signed a letter of intent and made an announcement that we had agreed on a couple of principles of how we would work together. That kind of included a number of things, but three of them were important to us at AEM. First was that we were going to provide a mechanism for us to better understand who was attending the National Farm Machinery Show. The easiest way to think about that is through registration, providing demographic information, registration information for the exhibitors so they would know for sure who was attending. Another piece we wanted that was going to have in that agreement was we were going to use our experience with show floor management to help optimize the space to make it a better experience for both the attendees and for the exhibitors. And then finally, we were willing to make a capital investment in the Expo Center in exchange for an equity position in the National Farm Machinery Show. Pretty sizable equity position we were willing to take, because knowing that the Kentucky Expo Center is a state-owned entity, and you know states are constantly under budget crisis, this was going to be a nice infusion of cash to give them the ability to make some of the upgrades in the facilities that frankly are needed, if nothing else, just to maintain the facilities, if not upgrade it for both the National Farm Machinery Show and some of the other shows that are there. So recently, based off of a couple of things, one, there's been a change in the leadership of the Kentucky Fair Board, Kentucky Expo Association. There's a new acting president, and there's also been kind of a complete turnover of the board of directors of that organization. And as a result, there's been a bit of a change in direction in their approach to this partnership. Essentially, the three things that we felt very strongly about, such as registration, show floor planning, and some sort of equity position in the show, have been removed from from consideration of the negotiations. So at that point, our board agreed and we as an association agreed that, you know, at that point there's really not much that we can do to foster this relationship at this point. But we do remain hopeful that at some point, we can find ways to work together. But in the meantime, we've got, always looking out for the best interest of our members. You know, as you know, we've got a longstanding agreement with the Commodity Classic with some of that same objectives in place. And we, are continuing to foster that relationship and continue to make Commodity Classic as, it's such a great show already, but continue to find ways to make that even better for the exhibitors and for the attendees. And we're constantly, looking for other ways that we can create meaningful ways for our customers and our members to interact with different farmers. And so we'll continue to explore those. You haven't heard the last from us in terms of what we'll be planning on the horizon, but we've got some great ideas and some great plans, all for the benefit of our members and for the farming community.
Well, I think we expect nothing less than that. So we'll definitely, of course, keep in touch with AEM as you move forward. And I know that I'll be probably attending at least a couple of those shows that you mentioned there again in 2018. So I'm looking forward to that.
You bet. Well, we'll certainly, our paths will cross at the upcoming Commodity Classic, we'll see what else sort of comes out of that in the future. But I do look forward to working with you and working with others in the media space, as well as everybody in agribusiness, because this is a small community, and it's in everybody's best interest to elevate the customer experience at trade shows or in marketing or all of these type of things. And that's absolutely the passion that I have, and that certainly I'm bringing to AEM that we intend to employ in all of our future endeavors.
Well, thank you very much, Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, giving us a little bit more information and background on the announcement that was made this week. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
When it comes to a healthy bottom line for your farming operation, nothing helps like healthy soil. Producers who use soil health management systems report lower input costs while maintaining or even improving their yields. Plus, those systems help with drought protection and soil and water conservation. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today to find out more and unlock the secrets in your soil. This message brought to you by the NRCS and this radio station.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our technical skills.
Our math. Our engineering skills.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our organizational skills, our problem-solving skills.
You're going to need our determination,
our honesty, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise, we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
AgNet West Radio Network, your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. Stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Wrapping up your ag news for today, October is Firewood Awareness Month, which is a perfect time to think about ways you can prevent the spread of invasive pests through firewood transport. Stephanie Ho has more.
October is when the weather turns cooler and many people's thoughts turn to firewood-related activities.
It's a great month for camping, hunting and fishing, which often involve camping or driving long distances to go visit a beautiful forest or area. And then also, if you heat your home or cabin with a wood stove, this is prime time to make sure that your firewood stock for the winter is sufficient.
Lee Greenwood with the Nature Conservancy's Don't Move Firewood Outreach Campaign says this is also a perfect time to let people know about the dangers of invasive pests.
The Don't Move Firewood campaign is an educational campaign to encourage better firewood choices to prevent the transport of invasive species that kill trees and forests. All sorts of insects and diseases and fungus can be in firewood, and when you move firewood, you can move those problems to a new forest.
The outreach effort works with USDA's Hungry Pests campaign, which aims to help people understand what they can do to help prevent the spread of invasive pests around the country.
Firewood is clearly the cause of many new pest infestations. You know, when a new pest infestation shows up in the center of the United States at a campground, then you know what has happened is that somebody has moved firewood from an infested area.
One of the most common pests is the emerald ash borer, which USDA reports has infested trees in 30 states.
When you move contaminated firewood out of the emerald ash borer federal quarantined area, you can start a new infestation of emerald ash borer. That's a very damaging pest for both wild forest trees as well as urban trees that we enjoy in streets and backyards and parks.
Greenwood adds that in many parts of the country, people can purchase certified heat-treated firewood,
which is firewood that has been heated up so that any pests or fungus or diseases in the wood are dead. And so the wood is no longer a risk if you move it long distances.
She points out the things people should look for when buying this kind of firewood.
If you are planning on camping and you want to make sure that you have firewood ahead of time, the best alternative, the smartest, safest choice, is to purchase certified heat-treated firewood. It should have a state or federal seal printed on the label that says it's certified.
Untreated wood that is brought from another area can carry invasive pests, which can pose a risk to the forests at the destination. She adds the threat is also reversed if people buy firewood for their own use from a dealer who is not reputable.
Make sure that they are in compliance with any local regulations on firewood movement.
Otherwise, she says, untreated firewood also could pose a risk to the trees on your own property. For more information about Firewood Awareness Month, go to don'tmovefirewood.org. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
When the crops are planted and the harvest is over, maybe you're thinking about some R&R. And if so, AARP has a few tips to make your travels away from the farm or ranch pain-free. Michael Clements has more.
Many will be traveling to and from the farm as harvest winds down and the holidays near. If you are heading out to visit family or wanting to go on vacation during the downtime, AARP Oklahoma State Director Sean Voskel says a few simple preparations can save you a headache later.
When you're heading away from the farm, be it a few days or even a few weeks, you need to make sure you have everything covered. It's easy to think about the livestock, but what deliveries will be coming? What bills may need paid? What supplies will those watching over things need? Make a list and make sure you have a communications plan in place should they need to contact you.
He says when you're traveling away from the farm, there are other considerations depending on how you are traveling.
If you're flying, leave the pliers off the belt at home. Chances are you won't be needing them, and there are travel restrictions with tools. That pocket knife, you can have it checked in baggage, but not in the cabin. Make sure it's in the suitcase and not in your pocket. And yes, they will want to check on your cowboy hat too. Traveling by car, be sure to cover the basics: a good spare tire, an emergency kit, and a blanket.
Learn more general travel tips Thursday night at 9 p.m. Central Time on RFD TV or online at aarp.org/AARP Live. Michael Clements reporting.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by AgNet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.